Tonight we continue in a sermon series that we've been on now for 5 weeks. This is the sixth. And so if you're here for the first time, welcome. I want to tell you very briefly what we've been doing. It's our contention that when Jesus shapes a community and when he brings people together, he does that with a very particular view in mind. What he wants is for the people who are brought together to live with each other in such a way that they become a good instrument of his in the world. Jesus did not mean for Christians to just come together one day of the week and to have their religious time and then go off just the same. But rather he meant to build people together into the kind of community that would be a powerful and a mighty instrument for his good. And the way he did that is fairly simple. This list that you see up here on the screen, each one of those words on the left side, that column there, each one of those is a very simple phrase that comes from the New Testament, where the writer and the writers of the letters are consistently telling people how they're meant to live together. And so we started our first sermon in the series by talking about how you build up one another, the ways that people who come together have a positive influence on each other to strengthen and build up. From there, we went down the list that you see before you. The community that Jesus intends is one where people are welcomed in, where the categories that usually are drawn up to push people out in the community of faith, because Jesus is like this, we welcome people. And we welcome not just to get something from others, but rather to serve one another. And our service takes many forms. One of those is that we carry each other's burdens. We bear one another's difficulties. And one of the ways we do this is by forgiving. And that brings us to where we are for tonight. And tonight we'll consider together what it means to be a community that admonishes one another. I want to start tonight by telling you my aim for the sermon. It's very simple. This will be a success if afterward some of us are more inclined than we used to be to say words of challenge and correction to each other. That's one thing I'd like to see happen. Secondly, it will be a success if some of us are more open to receiving words of challenge and correction from one another. I think that might be a harder challenge. And then thirdly, my goal in helping us become a community that's more open to giving and receiving admonishment is that we would grow. Because true admonishment that comes in the community of faith is not destructive, it's not mean, it's not tearing someone else down to build yourself up, but rather has the goal of causing us to grow. The Apostle Paul, who wrote a good deal of the letters that you find in the New Testament, put it very simply when he described one of the ways that the community of faith is meant to be shaped. In his letter to the Colossian church in chapter 3, verse 16, he writes this very simple phrase, "Admonish one another in all wisdom." The word admonish is not a word that we're used to hearing. And so let me say a little bit about what that word means. The simplest way to understand it is that admonish means to impart to someone a mind for something, or to have a corrective influence on someone who's going one way. Or another way of thinking about it is to lay something on a person's heart, so that while their heart had been previously inclined this direction, now it would be turned and would go a different direction because of the influence that the person who has admonished has had on them. It assumes the need for correction. And that brings us to the very simple fact that the reason that any community of faith would need to have people in it who are willing to admonish one another is very simple. And in one word I can say it: sin. Now listen, I don't mean that in every good church there's a few rotten sinners who need help. That's not what I mean. The way the scriptures depict the life of every man and every woman, every person who has decided, and some of you have decided, to follow after Jesus, and all of the people who haven't decided to follow after him, is that equally all of them will be struggling day after day with doing the wrong thing. That when a person becomes a Christian, they're not suddenly freed from the desire to be inclined in the wrong direction. They still struggle. And because of that fact, we need each other. We need each other to help. We need someone to say a word to correct. We need someone to remind us and to push us toward the right thing and away from the wrong thing. We need someone who can say a word of warning or challenge. We need, in short, a community where people are willing to admonish and be admonished by each other. Now, I want to admit that when I talk like this, I start to feel a little anxious. And I'll tell you why. Okay, it's not because I have a problem admonishing. Maybe I need more of a problem with that than I have. Some people are hesitant to go to another believer and tell them something challenging about their faith. Are any of you like that? It's hard, right? That's not the thing that makes me anxious. The thing that makes me anxious is the person who isn't hesitant enough about telling another person what they're doing wrong. Anybody, that person? You won't admit it, but have you encountered that? What I mean is, some people just get too much joy in telling others what they're doing wrong. Here's who I'm thinking of. I have a photo here. This is actually a drawing. Some of you know this, and some of you don't. This is a character from a popular TV show, Maude Flanders. She was absent one weekend, and she explained her absence like this. She told the group that was wondering, she said, "I was at Bible camp learning to be more judgmental." And maybe there are camps like that, okay? But this is not a camp like that. That's not what this sermon is about. We don't need people who are better at tearing others down by wielding the Bible like an instrument of their judgment. And unfortunately, I think because that happens in certain communities, or some of us have experienced that, we shy away from the otherwise very good practice of, in the right way, admonishing and challenging and encouraging each other. Because the truth is, every one of us will always need that. Now, what I want to do this evening is to take you to one story in the Old Testament. It's a story in which the main character is in dire need of the correction of a friend. It's someone who's a part of God's people, but he's gone off the rails, and what he needs is someone who has the courage to tell him that he's doing the wrong thing. That's all he needs. And his name is David, and the reason he needs correction is because of a woman named Bathsheba. Actually, she's the instrument of his own trouble. He's the reason he needs correction, but she's the victim of his sin. You'll see that. And then the third character is a man named Nathan, who is willing to admonish David. And so what I'm going to do is this. The story is in 2 Samuel chapters 11 and 12. If you'd like to read that on your own another time, that'd be fine. I'm not going to read straight through it. I'm going to tell you the story. And then as I'm unfolding the story, what we'll do is we'll stop along the way looking as plainly as we can for the reasons that David needs to be admonished. And we'll see if we can't learn something about our own need for admonishment. And also the people around us and their need for admonishment. Okay, so I'm going to tell you the story and we'll pause along the way. Sound good? Yeah?
Yes.
Excellent. All right. The story begins in springtime. As was custom in those days, if you were the king of a country, you were almost every year having to go to war. And it was true when this story began that Israel was at war with some of its neighbors. They needed to do this to maintain their boundaries against enemies and perhaps even to expand their boundaries. But if you were the king, as our main character David was, in fact, the king, you didn't go off to war. You stayed in the capital city where it was safe, and from there you commanded your armies. And so this spring, the armies of the Lord are out fighting while David's back in the city. And one afternoon, the king is just taking a stroll on the top of his palace. And the palace in Jerusalem was situated so that you could see the whole city from up there. And so he was surveying all that belonged to him. And as he looked, he saw there on the roof a woman who was taking a bath. And her name was Bathsheba. He was interested. He saw her and, well, he wanted to know who she was. And so what he did is he gathered up one of his servants and said, "That woman over there, would you find out who she is?" And so the servant went and got some information in return and said, "She's Bathsheba." In Hebrew, that means takes baths outside. It doesn't mean that. The servant reports back, it's Bathsheba. And what David does is, deciding that he wants her, he sends the servant to bring her to him. And the servant does. And he has sex with her. And then he sends her home, and she goes back. I'm going to stop the story here for a moment because already we see a man who needs to be admonished. David is he's one of God's followers. He's the king. He's a person who follows God with God's people. He's meant to be a representative of God to them. And he needs to be admonished. Why does he need to be admonished? Well, let me start by saying this. The first reason that many people need to be admonished is simply because the wrong thing that they're going to do, they don't know that it's wrong. They need to be admonished because of simple ignorance. And so you're going to see these words up here, note takers, there's going to be five of them, so you can write one knowing that there'll be four more. But the first reason that many people need to be admonished is the wrong that they're inclined to do, they just don't know that it's wrong. And I want to be very clear here. There's no reason to make a big fuss over these kinds of cases. Sometimes people who grew up in one place and had a set of values and morals that are just totally different from what it means to be a follower of God, they become a follower of God's and they just don't know that those things that were fine where they used to live aren't right anymore. I'll tell a quick story. I heard a pastor once tell about this time when his youth group was growing very quickly, and he was very excited, and there was lots of life, and there was a young man who had come to faith, who was a college-age person, and came to him and said, "Pastor, I want to serve by working with the youth group. Is that okay if I do that?" We've had this experience in our own youth program where someone gets excited and says, "I want to serve." And the pastor was really excited. "Yeah, join up. This guy's really enthusiastic. He's got a lot of energy. He's got a lot of time. Yeah." One evening, after an event, he smelled some funny smoke, you know what I'm saying, from behind the church building. And he went back there, and there was this leader smoking pot with the kids. Now, when the guy saw him, he didn't hide it. "Hey, pastor, how are you?" And the pastor realized, oh, he doesn't know that it's not a good idea to smoke pot. And so he didn't fuss or yell at him. He took him aside after, you know, things wore off and he got his food in him. He said, "Listen, you know, when you follow Christ, there's certain things that you stop doing. And one of those things is you stop smoking pot." And the guy didn't fight. He just said, "Why?" He said, "Well, listen, it's bad for you. It's illegal. You waste a lot of money on it. And it's also, it changes your brain so that you can't tell the difference between right and wrong in the way that you're meant to." The pastor just explained it very simply to the guy. And he said, "All right." And he stopped smoking pot. And that was it. And a lot of times, the reason that people in the community of faith need to be admonished, corrected, is because they don't know that the thing they're involved in isn't the right sort of thing to be involved in. And listen, this requires the right kind of approach from the admonisher. If the person comes with a wagging finger and a shame on you and how dare you, that's not the way it works. But to tell simply that this is the right path, not this one, is sometimes all it takes. And it's not just in instances where a person is doing something wrong that they shouldn't do. This same factor pertains to when a Christian isn't doing the thing that they're meant to do. Sometimes all a person needs is for a person of faith to come and say, "Oh, you don't understand, but Christians are people who spend lots of time praying. Let me teach you." Or Christians are people who choose to set aside a part of their resources to give to others. Let me show you how that works. Or many other things that Christians are meant to do that many people just don't know. Now, back to the David story for a moment. Do you think the reason he needed to be admonished here was because of ignorance? No. We might say hormones. I don't think it's as easy as that. I think there's actually something deeper going on here for David. Already at this point in the story, there is another reason why he needs to be admonished, which also, by the way, pertains to every one of us. And it's very simple if you think of it. He was a person who was a member of God's people. He was the king. And in the environment that he lived in as king, every single king was allowed to have any woman that he wanted. And for David, in this environment, he lived in a place where he needed to be admonished because everybody else around him was living in a total different way. Every other king, like if there was like a meeting of the kings, like to hang out and talk about what it was like to be the king, okay? Just imagine this with me. They would all sit around. Not one of them would ever think it was wrong to see a woman who wasn't your wife and want her and take her for your own. That's how it worked back then. And because David lived in an environment where that's what happened when you were the king, it was easy for him to put aside what he knew was right, since everybody else did it this way, and just follow the way that it worked in his culture. And it was the same for the servants. When they were asked, "Who's that woman? Would you go get her?" The servant should have said, "No, it's not like this for God's people. You're not supposed to have sex with a woman who's not your wife. We know that in the Ten Commandments it says you shouldn't commit adultery. And what you're asking to do here is adulterous. You're not allowed to do that even though you are the king. But no one said that. And I suppose one of the reasons was that everybody else in that environment lived a different way. Now the truth for us, this is very plain from my perspective, the truth for us is that we live in a place, in a world, where we're constantly bombarded with messages that teach us there's one way that's right, and those messages, many of them, are dead wrong. In effect, I would say the media, in many ways, is like a constant admonisher to all of us. That we put ourselves in front of television or movies or the internet, and whether we see it or not, we're constantly being admonished through advertisement, for instance, to believe something that's not true. Here's one. Money makes you secure. That message is being drilled into our heads so much so that we need the admonishment of the Christian community that says, money doesn't make you secure. Another one. Getting things is the key to happiness. That message is constantly drilled into our minds. We need the admonishment of one another to remind us, no, that's not so. You won't be any more satisfied if you have that little trinket or that treasure that you've been made to believe that you really want. We need each other to say that because everybody else is saying the opposite. There's a number of things this works for. I would say that sexual practice, it happens that this is at the center of the story with David, but there's no question that our culture has a very, very strong and persistent message about sexuality that's being given to us everywhere we look. And in effect, it is, sex is up to you. Do whatever you feel like. And it's private and nobody else's business. Whatever you feel like, that's what you're meant to do. And the truth is, just because everybody else says that, that makes it all the more needful for us in the community of faith to have someone who's willing to say, that relationship that you're getting involved in is wrong. Not because you're going to pull a Maud Flanders and just exercise your judgmentalism, but because you care about that other person and the person that they're using for their sexual gratification. But that's a calling for our community because we live in an environment where everyone else is going this way. Whether it's issues of sexuality or materialism or self-image or violence, we live in a time when violence is great. Everybody celebrates it. Violence is not good. We need someone in the community of faith to say violence is bad. We need the counter-admonition of the community of faith. Now, let me just make this very simple. I don't want to talk about high ideas out here. I want to talk about real life amongst each other here. And this is one of the reasons why it's hard to preach like this, because very many churches, and we're going to be tempted to this as well, maintain private lives of people who show up on Sunday, their elbows bump, and then they go away. But I'm talking about helping each other out by saying the challenging word that needs to be said just because we live in a place where so many of the things that we're called to as Christians are just unpopular, mostly because they're bad for business, and I mean that. Now, I think that definitely is the reason that this scoundrel David, and I use that word seriously, needs to be admonished at this moment. It's because he's acting like every other king and he shouldn't. Now, let's go back to the story. Because there's three more. Remember I said there are five? It says 2 + 3 = 5. You know what happens with Bathsheba? Is after this one night fling that David thought was just over, turns out she's pregnant. Word comes back to David. That woman that you thought was just a one night of pleasure is pregnant. And now David understands there's something really bad that's coming. Here's why. Her husband, this guy's named Uriah, her husband is actually fighting the war for David's people while David is back messing around with her wife. And the trouble with this is not lost on David. He realizes this is really bad. Here he is, taking this woman while her husband is fighting a war for him. What's he going to do? Well, if you stop for a moment and if you think of a man who's in a community that's going to admonish appropriately, that's going to say, this is the right thing and this is the wrong thing, you'd expect that maybe someone would say to David or he'd say to himself, you know what I did is wrong. I have to fess up and take the consequences and go on from there. That's not what he does. He comes up with a plan. He sends to the front lines to the commanders and says, send Uriah back. I want to give him a little R&R because he's been working so hard. Uriah comes to David's planning room. David sits him down and says, you know, you've been doing such good work. I figured you needed a little break, and you know, maybe you could go spend a little time with your wife. And then he says, wink, wink, like that. He doesn't really say that, but that's what's in effect. Come on, I'm trying. All right, help me out here. He's trying to trick Uriah to go cover up his own mistake. He's sure that Uriah will go and enjoy a night with his wife. What Uriah does is he goes back to his wife's home and he sleeps on the doorstep. And the next morning, David says, what happened? He says, I would never enjoy that pleasure while my men are off fighting for this great country that I love. Thank you for the break, but you send me back. I'm ready to fight. Can you imagine David's conscience? There's a part of him now that says, you need to do the right thing. But there's another part of him that says, don't do the right thing. Do you know this battle? Have you ever experienced this? If you go like this, no, I've never experienced that, it's probably because you've not been reflective enough to look at yourself. But most of us know what it's like to know the right thing and the wrong thing, and then to have that conversation inside between the one who wants to do the right thing and the wrong thing. David says, Uriah, come back. And he doesn't say, I messed up. He says, why don't you stay one more day? I'll tell you what, this time I don't want you to just go back to your wife's house. Come into my royal headquarters, and I'll throw you a feast, and we'll eat together. And he does. He gives him food. He also gives him wine. He slips him a Mickey. He tries to get him drunk. Should I rein it in a little bit? He does. He gets him drunk because he thinks if he's drunk, then he'll go back home, and then he'll be with his wife, and then everything will be well. Same thing. He won't go to be with his wife. Now, here's another reason why David needs to be admonished. And this one's deeper than the other ones. It's not just ignorance, which it will be often for me and for you. It's not just that everybody else is acting in this way, and that will happen for us too, but it's deeper than that. It's the resistance in David to doing the right thing that lives in all of us. Paul, the Apostle Paul, many years after this story, wrote, I think it was in Romans, he said, wretched man that I am. The good that I know I'm supposed to do, I don't do it. The bad that I know I'm not supposed to do, that's what I do. Paul is talking about an internal struggle in himself between the old man. When Jesus Christ died for you, all of you, whether you believe it or not, when he died on the cross for every one of us, he took the old us and killed it. That's happened for everyone. It's very clear in the New Testament the way Paul describes what happened when Christ died. He died for all of our sins. When he died, our sins were buried in the ground. When he died, we died. 2 Corinthians 5 says this, 14. We are convinced that since one died for all have died. The old you was put to death. The new you is waiting to be resurrected from the grave in Jesus Christ. But when that you comes back to life, guess what? That old you is also there all the while, wanting also to be brought back to life. And there's a constant struggle in every person. It's the old man or the old woman that resists what's right that we see here in this story. The old man in David is resisting doing the right thing and saying over and again, we can cover this mistake. Let's not take responsibility for this. Send him back and maybe we can have her again. That is going to live in every one of us. Listen, it's not just that there's like 5 or 6 naughty people in the church that we all have to be really on the lookout for so we can smash them with our Bibles. It's not that. It's every one of us has in us the old man or the old woman that resists what's right. And we see that here. And that means that, listen, you need to be willing to say to someone else what you're doing is wrong. Don't try to get this guy drunk to send him back and have fess up to what you did. And that's only one side of it. And you all are going to have to work at being ready to have someone say that to you. All of us. That what you are doing is wrong. I would venture to say it's never going to happen that any one of us in here is going to become king and send a guy off to his death because we slept with his wife. That's not going to happen, right? It's going to be smaller than that for us, but it's going to be just as wicked and insidious. I'm going to be insensitive to someone and say something bad, and I'm not going to know it. Someone's going to need to tell me. Or you are going to be really out of control with the way you use your body. And someone's going to have to say to you, you got to stop. It's bad for you and for the people around you. Or you are going to be selfish with your time. And someone's going to have to say to you, your time belongs to Jesus, not to you. You need to share it with the people around you. And there's many little things like that that we're going to need each other for. The old part of us is going to resist. Let me go back to the story for a minute, because there's a fourth reason that this fellow needs to be admonished that I think is even deeper and more profound and powerful. Actually, it's probably not more powerful, but it's also very powerful. Here's what's happening. He sends Uriah, he knows he's going to have to send Uriah back because the plan isn't going to work. This man is not going to sleep with his wife. So David goes off to his office and he puzzles over what to do next. And he decides, I'm going to send Uriah back to the front lines, but I'm going to put a note in his hands. And David puts his pen to his paper, and listen to what he writes. It's a note to the commanding officer, the guy who's in charge of the troops, that tells him where to go. It says, when the man who delivers this letter to you, he puts it in your hand, you tell the troops, gather them together, tell the troops that there's been a change of battle plans, that you're going to go into the most dangerous part of the battle, and once you're all there fighting, tell all the other men to step back, but don't tell Uriah that. You all retreat, and you leave him there. David writes this letter. He puts it in the hands of the man whose wife he slept with, and he makes the man, Uriah, deliver his own death note to the commander of the army. That's how low David sank. Now, I wonder if you'd think for a minute, what is the factor inside of David that is motivating him now? Think about that for a moment. What would make a man do something that dastardly? Fear, I think, is the word that I was thinking of is very close to that. Shame. He is ashamed of himself. He's totally ashamed of himself. And in a way, everything he's been doing is totally shameful. But the fact that he's feeling ashamed in this moment is so powerful that it not only keeps him doing the wrong thing, but makes him even more creative about how to do the wrong thing, just so he won't be found out. He's so in the grips of shame that he'll do anything to hide it. And the fact is that for many of us in here, one of the things that will keep us doing the wrong thing is that we'll be ashamed of ourselves. That battle that will go back and forth between the old you and the new you, it will be pretty even, but then the old you will have one instrument that's almost certainly going to overpower the new you, and that instrument is shame. And what that old you will say is, look how awful you are. No one can find out. You should be ashamed of yourself. You better do something to cover it up. And that instrument is powerful. But now you listen to me. The gospel of Jesus Christ, which is over all of us, is the antidote to shame. It wipes away that truth, and it says, no, you're not all of your mistakes. Jesus Christ has freed you from that. You don't need to go on hiding all the time. You can fess up and be honest about where you are. Now, this goes to both those of us who will be admonished and those who should admonish. If you're meant to admonish, never ever use shame to try to admonish a person to do the right thing. Don't do that. You're not allowed to do that in the community of faith. If you go back a little bit in this series, we forgive one another because God in Christ has forgiven us, and therefore when we correct, we do so with gentleness and with love, never with shame. And if you are a person who needs to be admonished, be open to hearing the news that you're messed up. You are. All of us are. The gospel is not get yourself right and have nothing to be ashamed of and then you'll be okay. It is you and I, all of us who have reason to hide ourselves from God, have been discovered by this King of love and he's freed us all together. No more shame. Stop letting shame keep you doing the wrong thing. Some man in here will find an easy way to view pornography on his computer or on his television and he'll start watching and then he'll get caught in the grips and he'll want to hide and he'll be able to. Or some woman will find the sweet fruit of gossiping about another woman in the church, and men do this too. I'm sorry to be so, put you in a circle. But one of us will find the joy of slandering another person, and we'll eat it up, but then we'll hate ourselves for it. Or we'll travel down some miserable road into some affair on the internet. Just emotional, we're just texting or emailing, and next thing you know, we're so ashamed, we're hiding everything we can. And what that necessitates is good, wholesome admonition from a brother or a sister who's willing to say, listen, I love you. I love you so much. What you're doing is totally wrong. Because I love you, I want you to know that. Trust me. Come away from that. Come to the right path. Let me lay it on your heart to bring you. This is what admonition aims at. The building up from sister to sister, or sister to brother, or brother to brother. So that we, and this is why, so that we grow into a community that shows the world what Jesus Christ is like, that he's good, that he's trustworthy, that his ways are right and pure, that they lead ever higher into life. Now, at this point in the story, when Uriah brings that letter and gives it to the commanding officer, what David wanted to happen is exactly what takes place. The fight rages, the troops step back, Uriah is slaughtered. News comes back to the kingdom. You know what David does? Sends her Bathsheba, and he makes her his wife. Nobody has said anything so far. Now, listen, it's hard because he's the king, right? And you could say, well, it'd be really hard to admonish him because he's over everyone. That's no excuse. In the true people of God, there is no higher or lower. We're all on the same plane, every single one of us. That means that some of you young people might actually admonish some people who are older than you. I'm serious. You may admonish me or people who you look at and think they're a spiritual giant. Do it in the right way, but admonish. Finally, someone appears, and this is the name up there that you see, Nathan. Nathan was a man who had had some interaction with David in the past. He worked as sort of one of his staff in his temple staff. This guy, Nathan, was sometimes brought in to hear his opinion on matters that had to do with the future. They wondered whether it was good to build a kingdom in this way, and they asked Nathan. He had some interchange with David. He knew the guy. And so Nathan finally decides to do the right thing and to say something. And it's quite brilliant what he does. This is the beginning of 2 Samuel chapter 12. He comes to David and he's very tactful. And this is another bit of advice for doing admonishment well. He doesn't just blurt out, but he thinks through it and he comes to him and he says this, David, I have something I want to talk to you about. I have a story I want to tell you. There was a city, and in the city there was a rich man and a poor man. At this point, by the way, David, the king, is assuming that this is a legal case that he's meant to render judgment upon. Often the king heard legal cases. And so David says, oh, a story about a rich man and a poor man in a city. Great, tell me. Nathan says this. The rich man had very many herds and flocks, lots of animals. The poor man had one little ewe lamb, just one. He worked hard for this lamb to buy it. And when he came into his care, he fed it every day from his very meager food. He tended to it like it was one of his own family members. He loved it dearly. David's listening. Okay. A traveler came to that city, came to the house of the rich man. Now, everybody knows, by the way, and this part's not in there, but I have to explain this. Everybody knows that when a traveler comes into your city, if that traveler comes to your house, you're obliged to show them hospitality and prepare a meal for them. Nathan says, but the rich man, he hated the idea of losing even one of his lambs. And so instead of going to his flocks and killing one for the traveler, he went and stole the poor man's one little ewe lamb, killed it, and fed it to the traveler. He told this story to David. Here's David's response. I do want you to see this. David's anger was greatly kindled against the man. Listen, there's a Hebrew turn of phrase that doesn't come through in the English. It was like, it sort of does. It was like a fire lit inside of David's heart. He became so angry, it burned him up on the inside. You ever felt like that? That's what David felt like against this man who was so brazen as to take this one little ewe lamb. And then he says to Nathan, as the Lord lives, the man who has done this deserves to die. He shall restore the lamb fourfold because he did this thing and because he had no pity. And now David is standing there in his righteous indignation, clenching his fist, passing judgment on this terrible man who did this awful thing. And do you see what's happening? Do you see what is in this other man's eye, which David sees so plainly? There's a speck there. And David sees that speck in this other man's eye and how awful it is. When all the while there's a log right there in David's eye. The only difference between what this man did and what David did is on the order of magnitude. If this is bad, what David did is horrendous, beyond description. It's abominable. And here we see the last reason that I want to put before your eyes as to why we will always need admonishment. It's this. It's the simple fact of blindness. That when we start doing something wrong, we often develop a very acute ability to ignore the wrong that we're doing, even while we're watching someone else do the same kind of wrong, and we're quite sure that it's wrong, and are very free to tell other people about it. The log and speck thing, by the way, is from Jesus' teaching in Matthew 7, I think, or 6. You ought to spend some time looking at that. We will always need admonishment because when we're engaged in sin, we almost always become blind to the wrong that we're doing. When other people can see it quite plainly, even while we can see the wrong that others are doing. Now, where does this leave us? After telling this story and getting that response from David, now's the time where Nathan's responsible for something, because you see, David yet hasn't seen. And the question is, what should Nathan do? And here's where there's a one-word answer. Admonish. He needs to correct him. He needs to say what David needs to hear. And the reason he needs to admonish, and I want to make sure this is plain before we look at his reaction. Matt, can I say something? You are so helpful all the time. Thank you so much. But that was pretty bad. I'm kidding. I have an apology. Matt, every week you do this with little thanks. And I want to just say thank you. I'm so grateful. I am. We all should say thanks to Matt at some point. Yes. Matt, really, thank you. I mean that. So I can end. Should I end? Let me come back. Let me finish. Nathan needs to admonish him. Jesus taught this, okay? Here's another note takers. Matthew 18. Read that chapter. There Jesus talks about how when one person in the community of faith sins, what you should do is not talk about them or write emails to each other or whatever else, tweet. You know, no. Jesus says, go to them. He means that go face to face to the person who's done something wrong. Go to them and just say it. Talk to them about what's wrong. And the reason Jesus is free to do this is, on the one hand, he knows that everyone he's talking to, everyone is always going to need this at some time or another. And also, the reason Jesus is on about this is because he wants his followers to grow. And he knows they're going to need each other to do that. They're going to need a bold, courageous person who can say what you're doing is wrong without any self-consciousness or self-righteousness, but just say it. And in Galatians, we have instruction on this, 6:1, Paul says, if any one of you finds a brother or sister that's in a transgression, those of you who have the Spirit, go to that person gently and correct them with a view toward restoration. Don't correct them to kick them out. Don't go with your own spirit, but with the Holy Spirit. Go and gently correct them so that you regain that person, so that the community is restored and built up. Here's what Nathan does. After David's blatant disregard for his own sin, after all that he has done, Nathan then says to David, you are the man. No mincing words. No need to beat around the bush after that. When David says what should happen to that man, Nathan just says, it's you. You're that man. What's the result of this? Oh, there's a lot of things that happen in the story. I'll just direct your attention to one thing. Okay, this is Psalm 51. It's a beautiful psalm right in the heart of the Psalms. You read that psalm, it's a man who comes and says, God, I have messed up. I am messed up. All the way through and through, I'm just a wreck. You know, God, everything that I've done, even though I've always tried to hide it from everyone around me, I know it's known to you. Oh, God, would you please clean me? Would you wash me and I'll be whiter than snow? Would you forgive me because my heart is contrite and broken? I know that's what you want, God. And the man who wrote that psalm is David. And he wrote it after Nathan came and said this to him. And that means the end of good admonition is repentance. is that we would see our sin and not be shamed to leave the community, not be pushed out because, unlike other people, we're bad, but so that we would simply go to the good and gracious and loving Father and say to Him, I've made a mistake and I'm wrong. Would You forgive me and restore to me the joy of Your salvation? So that I can sing and praise You again. So that I can be glad in the company of people who, like me, are fellow travelers, who have broken and weak hands, who can't hold anything but Your grace. Oh God, have grace on me and restore me. And that's what David does. And God restores. That's who God is. God is the one who takes people after good and wholesome admonition, sets them back on their feet, brushes them off and says, You are my son, You are my daughter, and I love You just as You are, and I restore you so that once again you can walk with the people of God and serve me together. And the community that Jesus intends is very simply that. A community of forgiven people who take responsibility for each other to challenge and correct and encourage and equip each other. And they do it so that God builds them together so they can serve Him well. That, my friends, is what I want to see happen for this community. And listen, if you're a visitor and you're going to go back to your own place, you have that influence wherever you land. That you become a person who's mature enough to correct and be corrected for the purpose of growth in the community of faith. That is the adventure that I want to be on with you. And I'll ask you to be on with me as we work at becoming the community that Jesus intends. Now, let me end by praying for the help of the Spirit to enable us to be a community that lives in this way. Let's pray. God, You are so good. We thank You that even when we hide ourselves from our sin and our fault and our failure, that You are never fooled, and also that You are always ready for us to come back, to lay bare before You our failures and our faults, so that You will, as You always do, forgive us and restore us. I pray that You'd give each one of us the courage and the grace to admonish one another effectively and faithfully. And then more importantly, that You'd give each one of us the strength and the courage to be admonished, to receive from one another the corrective words that we need to hear. And we ask this not only for our sakes, God save us from that, but for the sake of the mission that You've given us, that as a church we would be equipped to encourage and challenge each other so that we would be the church You mean for us to be. We ask for this with all boldness because we believe You want to give us what we need to be Your faithful followers. And we ask this in the name of our Lord and Your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.